So. Is it not?
Okay, Kevin, it just says Ari is still here before he, I don't know if you're staying or going, but.
He's gonna stay.
You're gonna stay, okay. That's okay, by the way. We just want to thank Ari for all of his efforts on behalf of the yeshiva. Ari, besides being an exceptional person, really has added so much this year and the 3 years previously. And we see you hiding behind the pillar, Ari, by the way. We see you hiding behind the pillar. But really, Bigadol, the yeshiva only functions because of the contributions of his Tamidim. Baruch Hashem, we have amazing Rebbeim and a great staff. But it's really you guys, both as far as just being here, you know, showing up, davening and learning, but really everything else, you know, your suggestions, your passion, your involvement, your leadership, and we certainly encourage that to continue and to continue to make this such an incredibly special place. Before I speak about what I was planning on speaking about, I do actually just want to opine for a second about just thinking how special YU is. For those of you who heard Rabbi Shulman today, first of all, I thought it was awesome. For those of you who listened just from start to finish, it was so nice just sort of seeing Rabbi Shulman. You know, like, people are so broad. You know, I would say if all you do is see a person in Shir, it's like you're sort of like almost missing sometimes the humanity, and it was so beautiful today. But I live in Muncie, Baruch Hashem, with some other people who are in this room, and I see Jeremy Borgen and others who are on the screen. Muncie is an awesome place. There's so much that's going on. There's so much Torah, there's so much passion, there's endless chesed. But I very much do appreciate, like, coming in here every day, and not just the guys are learning, but guys come in, they're wearing masks, even on the street. They're in a base medrash, behind screens. Even though most people had COVID or they have antibodies. But the point is that there's a certain sense of yashrus and integrity and of doing things in a certain type of way and not trying to hop around and get around this. And like, and it's like very much like the midah of like Rav David Feinstein or Moshe Feinstein, of just to live almost a life, not in a way that's not sophisticated, but just this beautiful life of simple pashtos and trying to do the Ratzon Hashem. And just to be around that, as I have been for the last almost 30 years, it's a tremendous, tremendous gift. Okay, there's a little bit of a hack the last couple days because I had emailed the person, a very, very chashuv Talmid Chacham, who does a tremendous amount for the yeshiva, to make up a sign for this, whatever you want to call it, you know, for this discussion. He sends back a sign that had, you know, my picture and a bunch of pink hearts. I don't know if Ari, this officially went out or didn't go out, or I think Ari saved me from, so I got a text from one of the community yeshiva, like, Rabbi, nice, you know. So he said, Rabbi, with that type of sign, the guys are going to be expecting some type of like mushy, fluffy something about, you know, love and dating. So Ari saved me. And all of a sudden, a blue sign appeared. I'm not sure how that happened, if Rabbi Schnall intervened, but either way, you know, based on what this Talmud had wrote, I'm sort of happy that it was changed from pink to blue. And that's sort of a funny statement, but yeah, okay. And, you know, the reason being, and I guess maybe it's a good way to begin, you know, I'm all for mushiness like everyone else. But if a person's, like, mindset before dating or going into dating or relationships or thinking about should I get married or should I date, that, like, that the tzior, so to speak, like the image, is that of, like, mushiness, you know, and hearts and roses, and it would be so cute to date, and I can sort of, you know, and like that's sort of the image of a person. In a way, a person focuses on that image, which is very sweet and very cute and very fun, And it's sort of like missing like everything that goes on beneath the surface. Like all of the work and all of the avoda and all the avoda's panim and all like the serious issues in what one's own development. And that sort of gets sacrificed because of like, you know, this image of, you know, hearts and roses. And I'll explain what I mean a little bit. And to that end, I've given over the years, I think this is my 16th or 17th year being a mashgiach here, you know, many, many dating vadim or dating talks. And I think when I used to do this when I was younger, is that I would speak about some of like the technicalities of dating. You know, how to find a person, how long a person should date for, how do you know when it's the right person? People try to get me to talk about things like do's and don'ts on dates, do's and don'ts on dates. That was a mouthful. Or what to talk about on dates, which it seems like if someone needs to tell you what to talk about on dates. I've actually had over the years, like guys call me on dates from like a bathroom, right? She said this, I'm not sure what to say. I'm out of things to talk about, like whispering, like in a bathroom stall. And I'm like, there's no schmooze for that guy. You know? It's like, just come back to yeshiva and try again in 5 years. So some of like the technicalities of dating, you know, how long should a person date for, like those are all like important things, you know, what to look for in another person. Those are all important things, but it's almost like dome a little bit. I don't mean to embarrass myself, but when I started learning after high school, you know, I'd been learning all of like 3 or 4 months. So of course I was like a big time of chacham. And of course the first sefer I bought was like a ketzos, because what else should you be learning if you've been learning for all of, you know, 4 months? And I went to like my cousin's house in Beit Suf in Eretz Yisrael. My cousin's like a huge Talmid Chacham. He's been called for like 30 years. He's like, so what are you learning? I'm like doing this and I'm learning ketzos. He's like, ketzos? You know, like, he's like, are you doing the Shulchan Aruch and like the Nos HaKelim and then this? I'm like, no, just we go straight to the ketzos, right? So he sort of looked at me like, you know, with the, like, who's this idiot, you know? So to some degree, if a person just, like, as they think about dating, it's like the shilas are, you know, sort of like some of those, like, ma'asi, like, post facto, you know, how long should we be dating for? But without, like, the real, like, etzem sort of question as far as, should I even, like, be married? Or am I prepared to be married? What work do I have to do to successfully be in a relationship? Is it the right time for me to start in this venture? Do I have a recognition that the decision of getting married is a million times more significant than any other decision I'm going to make? And am I prepared for that? Am I prepared to put myself in that position? What do I have to work on the pnim that I can have a beautiful marriage? And whenever I think about that question, I think about a story that in my mind I associate with Ryakov Kamenetsky, because it's the type of thing he would have said. I think he was the one who was involved, but it may not have been him. But either way, as I said, it's something that I think Ryakov would have said in his typical insightfulness. So let's assume that was Ryakov. So one of his children was becoming a father, and his children goes to Yaakov and he said, you know, like, Tati, like, I'm becoming a parent. Do you have any advice? Which I would say is a horrible question, but it's like, it's almost like nonsensical. You know what I mean? It's like, what advice do you have for a parent? So he's like, you're asking me now, like, what advice to be a good parent? He said, the advice is, like, spend 25 years working on yourself and work on your midos and work on your patience and do this, and then you'll be a good parent. It's like asking the night before, what do I have to do to be a good father? And marriage is exact same as well. Marriage is not like, okay, I'm going to show up and then a week before I start dating, maybe I'll go speak to, you know, Rabbi Blast or whoever and get some advice. No, it's like, what have I been doing the last 20, 23, 25, like 30 years of my life to prepare myself for the most significant decision I'm ever going to make? And that's very significant. And the stakes are quite high because people get married all the time. Again, this is not to scare anybody. Marriage is a beautiful thing, but the divorce rate is quite high. it would probably be a lot higher if it wasn't for the fact that people had children very quickly, and you know, people are bound to their marriages. There are people who have unhappy marriages, maybe people very, very happy marriages. And then that affects a person. It affects a person's simchas chayim. It affects a person's home. It affects a person's children, right? Instead of a person really saying, like, let me do all the avodah necessary somewhat before I get married, and then, of course, the rest of my life as well. This is not like a finished product before a person gets married. So what are some of the issues and some of the questions that a person should be thinking before they get married, before they start dating? Now, a few of those questions, I'm just going to sort of get them out of the way, I guess are more either practical, or they're not so much related to like one's own personal growth. But let me just mention those, a few of those. The first question, and this is a question that, again, I guess I sort of make fun of myself. I was like so idealistic. I'm still very idealistic. But like, if you would go ahead and you would tell me, Josh, you know, which is obviously my name, you know, such and such a girl, and she comes from a wealthy family. First of all, like, guys never talked that way in NYU. Maybe they do now, but they never did in my day. But sometimes someone would say, oh, she comes from a very successful, I'd be like, ah, no, that's not for me. You know, money, like, forget it. You know, I want to live just on Torah and love and God. And like, the reality is that you're making like a practical life, you know, decision. So a person who wants to start dating and they're in their second year in college and they have X amount of years of graduate school, they have to be able to march to their parents and say, I want to get married. And they're like, well, okay, you know, who's supporting you the next 5 years? And you're going to be able to show up to your father-in-law's house, sit down with him and look him in the eye and let him know that you're a gavra, you know, that you're a person, right? Now, does that mean that a person needs to have enough money to live before they get married? Well, in certain circles, yes. That's usually not the way that it is in our circles. But at least to be like enough of a gavra to say, like, this is my plan in life, and this is how I plan on taking care of your daughter or my future wife, and I'm going to need some help along the way. But, you know, there has to be like a strong pragmatic element involved, recognizing just what life is and what life costs, or, you know, and that needs to be something where there's some consideration about. So that's number one. Number two, and I can't stress this enough, is a person like willing to give up really the best years of their learning in life? Baruch Hashem, a person learns their entire life. People become huge Talmid Chachamim at age 30 or 35 or 40 or 50. But I can't tell you like what a gift these years are. Like what a gift it is to be able to have a morning Seder, a night Seder, and have person's lucky enough to have summers in either Moresh HaKolo or some other place. It's like, it's a fleeting gift that has like a timestamp on it. You know, the timestamp is, you know, 18 to 20 whatever, and then 70 to 75, you know, and those 50 years in between, it's like, I'm going to try to hop a ride, especially if you're going to live in New York, you know, while sitting on the subway, you know, pulling out a Gemara and then going to a Shir, and then, and all that's like amazing. I mean, kol hakavod to Balabatim that can do it, but just like the decision to leave the type of learning you guys do now should not be done with any type of like lightness, without any recognition of what you're leaving by doing that. I just remember there's a very, very chashuv guy who was a serious guy in Reish Shulman's Shir. Just a very wonderful person, someone from a very well-known family in the Five Towns. And he was like a real like morning sitter, night sitter guy in YU. And then he gets married, he starts working in finance in the city. And like within, it was already Elul, and then he's like, am I allowed to say slichos b'yachidus on the subway at 5:30 in the morning, right? So that, like all of a sudden, it's like in the course of 2 months, his life shifted from, you know, being like a Mitzvah and a Shulman Shir, to now, you know, the first Shaila is about saying Slichos B'Yachidus on the subway at like 5:35 in the morning. And she said, it's just, and that's not a bad thing. It's just, it's a total shift of life. It happens like very, very quickly. And the second piece of that is not so much related to Talmud Torah per se, but it's related to the fact that whether or not you're conscious of it, You guys are in a very unique stage of life and a very important stage of life. You think about your life, let's say growing up, you know, in TNAC and KBC. So not to pick on you, but it applies to 300 guys in YU as well. You know, TNAC, KBC, Shalavim, Woodmere, DRS, Shalavim, Haishiva Kotel, you know, you can sort of like mix and match the various places along the way. As mature as certain guys might be who are going through that mahalach, you're essentially a product of your families, right? For good or for bad, usually for good. You're a product of your communities. You're a product of your schools. You're a product of Shalavim. And while one has their own identity, the identity, like Rubo Kukulo, is like shaped by sort of the institutions, the experience, the communities you're from. And it's not always true. Obviously, the people who are in this room who are Balei Tshuva, I mean, there's variations within that. And the person gets married, and now they're sort of living, you know, a different type of sort of like system life, so to speak. You know, I'm married, and now like I have children, and I'm working, and I'm doing whatever. How about the years of like the real Avodas Panim? You know, who am I? What is my life vision for myself? What are my aspirations? You know, why did Kosh Baruch Hu put me in this world? Where do I see my life direction? It's like, these are the years of like the real, almost like personal, individualistic shaping and cultivating of one's life and one's vision. The person comes back from Eretz Yisrael and they're married 6 months later, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just like, where was the time to really integrate and inculcate all past experiences? And now sifting through all of that, saying, how do I sort of integrate that into my own unique nefesh, my own unique soul? And that's really important. And just the last thing I would say, not so much about cheshbonos, why to date or not to date, but I just want to say that I understand very well. Well, I'm trying to think, when's the last time anybody here went to like a normal wedding? You know, when's the last time you saw the inside of Marina Del Rey? You know, I heard the place is still standing, but I understand very well what it's like. You know, I know there are guys here who are starting to date or who started to date already, guys who get married. You go to a person's wedding, you go to their l'chaim, a person's naturally lonely. I understand the huge draw of why all of that would inspire a person to want to date. And maybe they should be dating. But that can't be the reason. It can't be the reason of, well, it'd be nice to have someone to talk to, or, you know, I see like my friends and it's so nice, and like it is very nice. But like that can't sort of stand in the face of any real work that a person has to do on themselves just because they have some type of sort of like idyllic vision of what dating and marriage is like. That can't be like the reason, so to speak, to push a person again into something that is the most significant part of their life. So with all that being said, the cheshbonos about learning, the cheshbonos, as much as we don't like talking about these things, about money, and again, not necessarily to have money, but at least to know like what life costs. I'll say it's a funny story, if you don't mind. Again, sort of speaking of my idealism and naivete. So my wife, Alana, had gone to Frisch for a couple of years, and she went to Bruria, and she had a teacher she was very close with in Frisch by the name of Perry Tershwell. I don't know if people know the Tershwell family. A wonderful daughter. He's married a bunch of guys here in YU. So he's like, he tells like my wife and I, you know, we should, you know, let's meet. You know, we were engaged. And he sits down with like a pad of paper, which is like very typical of him. He starts making up like graphs and charts. What does it cost for this? And I keep in mind, this was 1995. I don't mind saying that I paid for our apartment after we got back from Kol and Eretz Yisrael, I think $600 a month for a two-bedroom apartment. I think that same $600 can now like, it can get you, you know, like half of a toilet in that same apartment, you know, for that. He's like, so you said that, like, you know, this caused this and this caused that. And first of all, I had no clue how, like, what anything, like, he's like, how much do you think it costs to like rent the apartment? I'm like, I don't know, $200 a month. You know, like, how about a car? I'm like, I don't know, $3,000. Like, I was like, so just like not in the world of like, again, probably still to this day also. And at the end of the day, like he said, like, you know, listen, it's very important if you know for yourself that you're not totally in this world to marry somebody who's very much in this world. Because if not, you'll have kids walking around with, like, no clothing on and, like, no electricity and stuff like that, you know. So he's like, how much do you think, like, you know, just, like, for a year, for a family, how much do you think it costs them, you know, to live in a house? I'm like, I don't know. So he puts out a figure, $100,000, and he circles it, like, three times, right? And I'm like, who is this crazy guy? You know, like, $100,000, you know. So as you probably well know, $100,000, like, you know, good luck. But so again, not that people have to have that money, but at least to have, like, some sense of what the world costs and some practical quality. Very importantly, think about, am I willing to sort of sacrifice my learning? Am I willing in a way to sort of rush through a stage of life, of personal growth? All those things are cheshbonos. But really much more significant, or not more significant, but maybe equally significant, is the question, just as far as me as a person, am I prepared to be in a relationship? Recognizing how beautiful relationships are, recognizing, as the Zohar said, that Kadosh Baruch Hu was found ben ish l'ishto, recognizing that every statement of Chazal, of course, is undoubtedly true, and shlemus ha'adam, recognizing the impact of, like, a deep connection with a person of the opposite sex, like, recognizing, like, all of those things. But am I prepared to be in a serious relationship or not? Recognizing that all of those things that are described by Chazal are things that don't come about, like, under the chuppah, that moment. They come about often, like, through a process of work and growth, commitments, stops and starts, you know, vicissitudes, beautiful moments. So what are the areas, perhaps, to be conscious about? And there's many, but for the sake of, I guess, maybe simplicity, I broke it into four different categories. And I encourage people, you know, I feel so close to most of you, to obviously, if you ever want to speak to me privately, to do so. And also, as I'm speaking now, you know, we're all friends here. If anybody feels they want to ask a question that might be matim to others, so I feel free to do so. So let's mention, maybe starting off first with something that probably does not apply to everybody here. I think everything I'm going to mention, probably at least one thing probably applies to somebody, I would imagine. And for some of you, maybe more than that. The first issue is that anybody who's dealing with, like, an issue of mental health, right? A person who's experienced like depression, and depression is not the same as having, like, ups and downs in life. You know, everyone has ups and downs in life. There's sort of depression with, like, a lowercase d, and then, like, real depression. And then first maybe has some glimmer that, okay, I'm depressed because, you know, I'm by myself. If I was married, that would make it better. Marriage does not make any real issue better. Marriage takes a real issue and then brings another person into that real issue, and now you have that same issue, like, times two. You know, it's not like the solution to a real issue is not, okay, go get married. And quite honestly, you know, any Rav or Rebbe or Mashgiach that says, okay, marriage will take care of that, marriage allows a person sort of to be mashlim themselves, but it's not like a fix-me-up. It's not like we're going to take this kilkul and throw it into, like, the marriage hopper, and then out comes, like, shlemus. It's not the way that things work. It's just the opposite. So any type of mental illness, a person who's dealing with severe anxiety, a person who's dealing with addiction or addictive tendencies, like, these are not things that a person can say, well, you know, marriage will deal with, or it'll get better over time, right? It's not true. It's not true, and I wouldn't say that the word is that it's abusive, but you're being incredibly unfair to a person, because some of those things are things that the person you're dating might never know about, right? A girl that you're dating, if you have addictive tendencies, and you're having issues with internet or other forms of addiction, or you're depressed, those are things you hide from a person until you're married to the person. Those are things, again, it's like, those are issues that need to be dealt with. I just mentioned the three most sort of common ones: addiction, depression, and anxiety. These are things that have to be dealt with beforehand. And when I say dealt with, we're not speaking about perfection, but there needs to be, like, a road and a tahalich, how to deal with any real issue in life. That's number one. Number two is the issue of life management. Am I a functioning person who's able to manage my life? Now, it's hard to know where the dividing line is. I'll try to speak about this without being too emotional, but for my years in YU, so I roomed, we learned together for 2 years in Yerushalayim, then 3 years in YU, we roomed together with one of the most incredible human beings by the name of Brian Galbit, Baruch Zvi Galbit. Ethan, you know the Galbit family, or he was Nifter last year in Av from a brain tumor. He's an incredible, incredible human being. His daughter married Gaby Barashansky from the Barashansky family. He's just an incredible human and like super smart. Got smicha on YU, went to Yale Medical School. Baruch Hashem has eight children and grandchildren. And we would live together, and his room was just a bloody mess. I mean, mine wasn't so much better, but it's like, before his parents would come visit from Miami Beach, he would have to make sure to, like, you know, put a sheet on his bed. Now, some of you, this may sound very familiar, you know, we all have like areas where we don't sort of like function great. You know, I mentioned that when it comes to like money or things like that, like taxes, like I wouldn't know how to like, you know, I wouldn't know the IRS but like you're a functional person. You know, you get up, you know, you get your work done, you have a paper due, you do your paper, you're supposed to show up to Seder, you show up to Seder. That doesn't mean people don't miss here or there, but like, are you like a more or less fully functional human being? And the answer is no. So then like, why then bring like a person into that? You know, when you're having a hard time functioning yourself and you have a hard time getting things together and like everything is always late and like your life is like a mess and like, it just, you know, a person needs to have some element of shleimus, you know, and then a woman or a man, you know, again, vice versa, like just expands in that shleimus. But if I'm like just not a together person, then again, all I've done is create more dysfunction by bringing a person into that. So that's the second point. The first is issues of mental illness. The second is issues of basic life functioning. Now, the last two issues, I think, are probably a lot more pertinent. You know, the third issue is, and this is very complicated to sort of speak about, and maybe difficult for some of you to hear, is, am I a relatively whole person? Or am I a person with tremendous voids and maybe some brokenness? You know, there's a word for that in psychology. People know, you know, sort of the word of maybe codependence, right? If I'm a relatively healthy person, then again, I can just expand my life and bring, you know, a woman into that. But if, let's say, I'm not anywhere close to being whole myself, and what that means is that I find myself constantly being, again, what we call mental health, like one down. I'm always feeling sort of less than. Or maybe because I'm feeling less than, I'm always putting myself like higher than. So I'm coming from a place to like arrogance. I'm super dependent on what other people think about me. And I constantly need your approbation and you to tell me that I'm great. And I need a woman to tell me that, you know, they love me or make me feel good about myself. Like, that's a person who's like so far from shuttling themselves. And all that they do is then take all of that and just like dump it onto another person, and they make life somewhat unmanageable for the other person. A person needs to, in a good relationship, be able to have exceptional boundaries. When we say boundaries, we mean containment boundaries and protective boundaries. Now, containment boundaries means, I'm sure these are words that you guys know about, like, am I contained? Or am I just like leaking out to everybody? You know, I'm obnoxious. I'm in your face. I'm in your personal space. I'm inappropriate. I'm like making you feel like, you know, awkward. I'm making you feel uncomfortable. You know, I'm hogging like all of like the discussion. Like, that's a person who doesn't have great containment boundaries. Like, I should be over here, but I'm like everywhere, you know? And that shows up in small ways and in big ways. And that's very unhealthy. How about protective boundaries? What protective boundaries means? It means that I'm like, if you tell me something, I can hear you, and I can process it, and I can think about it, and I'm much of what you're saying, but I'm not constantly reactive or defensive, where I'm not being made to feel small. Like, I have some sense of protection. I have some sense about myself that I can hear you talk and be critical of me or give me feedback, and I don't disappear. I don't go into a shell. I don't go running off. I don't act like a baby. You know, I can just, like, I can hear you and take in what you're saying, and we can communicate properly. But if I am far from being whole as a person, then communication, feedback, criticism, healthy dynamics, healthy interdependence, where I'm okay myself, but then we can connect together, as opposed to being too dependent. Like, it's impossible in relationships. It's impossible. And the question is, do we have a certain wholeness ourselves that we can now share our life with somebody else? And the last issue, the first one I said again, are issues of mental health, anxiety, depression, addiction. Number two, life management. Number three, a certain wholeness and healthiness as a person. And number four, which again is probably shovel chol nefesh. Maybe a few people here, not so much, but I think I would violate huge Isur Daraisa if I call out the people that I think this is not so much an issue for. But, you know, where are we as far as our midos? And, you know, a person can go to Camp Hask, you know, for 27 years. You know, they live in Camp Hask. You know, then they travel down to Nicaragua because they hear that there's a child in Nicaragua who needs shoes, you know, so they're in Nicaragua, and then they're over here, and then they're, you know, they're giving away every penny they have, and then, like, and you know, you feel like the person's like a real tzaddik, which maybe they are in certain ways. But often, the fact that we're doing so many amazing things in our life, it doesn't mean that, you know, as far as midos, we are where we have to be. Somebody who has an issue with anger, right? Somebody who you can imagine themselves, like, raising their voice, I don't mean once in a while, but like on a regular basis to their children, or speaking sharply to their children, or speaking sharply to their wife, or blowing up, right? That person is just, like, not set up to be married. A person who has a hard time ever expressing themselves. You know, I can't be open. I can't be vulnerable. I can't talk about how I'm feeling. I can't share positive or negative. I'm just, like, so repressed. You know, that's, like, a fundamental issue in midos in life. A person who, even though they may seem like they're very kind, fundamentally are self-centered, right? You're talking to me. Am I looking at you? Am I locked in? Do I really care? Am I really hearing? Do I value your happiness above my own? Or am I, like, listening to you so that I can respond? So now I can tell you what I think about something. Like, it's like a fundamental, like, self-centeredness. Are our natures naturally critical and judgmental, and we come home and we're always looking at something that our parents are doing that are wrong, and our siblings are doing this, and this person is doing that, and everything I have, like, you know, like a day about, and I'm judgmental? Or do we have, like, a spirit of compassion, a spirit of forbearance? Mavir Midosov. But these are huge things. These are the things that just are the difference between, like, happy, healthy, functioning, loving, beautiful homes and homes that are just the opposite. And what a blessing it is to bring a child up in a home like that, to bring a home of that beauty, to live the type of life that Rashi speaks about at the end of Chayei Sarah. The Adam Korach Eitzel Imo, that Yitzchak was so beautifully connected to the spirit of his mother. And then when he brought Rivka into that home, she just amplified sort of Sarah's presence. Because that was a home of everything that we're speaking about. It's just a home of beauty. And how about kids who don't grow up in that? You know. So I wanted to leave with the story. And then after doing so again, people have any either thoughts or questions. Again, so maybe the practical issue, should I be dating because of learning, my own growth, money? But maybe the more fundamental questions, like, am I prepared to be in a relationship? And again, like, nobody makes a perfect deal of any of this. You know, it's like perfection comes maybe a moment before your death, and maybe even then. It's like, maybe even then, we're not... The question is like, are we conscious about these things? Are we recognizing, yeah, I do have an issue with codependence, I have an issue with midos, and I'm working on it, I'm conscious about it, maybe I'm seeking help for it, maybe I'm talking through, like I'm working on it. Like, again, it's not, it's not like a final product. It's a question of, do I have a very good understanding of who I am, what I have to work on, and I'm working on it. I can be vulnerable with the girl or the woman I'm about to marry, tell her about these things. Like, you know, it's complicated. I want to just conclude just with a story. You know, for me, Rosh Shlomo Zalman was nifter when I was in NYU. I think 94 and 95, one of those years. Robert, do you remember? It was like one of those, 94 and 95. Rosh Shlomo Zalman was like, he was like a malach, you know. But a malach, like, he became a malach. You know, he worked on himself to become a malach. He wasn't born a malach. He's just... And the things I love most about Shlomo Zalman are the relationships he had with his children and with other children in the neighborhood in Shaar Chesed, with poor people. Like, you talk about, like, his home was like, I think the way the Chanuch Teller says in his book, he said you walk in and you'd find like a Hasidic Rebbe sitting next to a hooligan. That's what Teller said. I think somebody should tell Chanuch Teller, like, nobody uses the word hooligans anymore. Like, hooligans like a word from my distant youth growing up in Baltimore. But like that's what Shlomo Zalman was. But and his relationship with his wife was so precious. So he was getting interviewed one day for like a magazine article. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story. I know Shlomo Zalman, he was such like an affable, warm, easy to be around presence. And the person speaking with him for like many hours, and all of a sudden Shlomo Zalman, like, you know, gets up, he like does up his like his jacket or kapata, he puts on his hat. The guy who was interviewing him, he said, like, he wasn't sure what was going on. It was like, all of a sudden, he's, like, running off to take a chasana. He's like, you know, Rebbe, is the Rebbe okay? He said, no, I see, like, my wife, like, walking in, like, to the house. He said, when a Sefer Torah, when, like, a Davar Shiva Kedusha, like, enters into a home, so, like, you're mechabed that entity or that person properly. So he got up, he put his, like, jacket on. Beautiful story, you know? Such, like, a beautiful, like... And then his children said that after his wife had passed away, they said, like, did you ask Mechila from, like, mommy before she passed away? He said, like, I didn't really have to ask Mechila. He's like, I know it sounds like garbage. He said, we had such a beautiful marriage, and I was so cognizant of the fact of what an incredible person she was. Like, I can never bring myself to, like, raise my voice at her. Now, those stories might be unusual, but the beauty of that relationship only comes about when a person has or is on a path of their own personal shlemus. That's not a marriage that comes about that's plopped down in a person's laps. If a person is shalom b'midosav, a person deals with their anger, a person is giving, a person has a certain sense of wholeness, a person deals with any mental health issues they have, a person is functional, like, that's a marriage a person gets. It's, and I see it all the time in my life. So I want to give you guys a bracha that wherever you are in this journey, you continue to work on yourself. You realize the beauty of the mirchim what lies ahead, but also the enormous responsibility of that. And that, Amir Hashem, we all sort of continue to go on the journey of self-improvement and self-growth until ultimately we have that real beautiful bracha in this world of a beautiful, happy marriage and home. Okay, anybody want to either ask a question what I said or clarify or disagree or anything that might be relevant? Anybody on Zoom that want to chime in or send in a text? Yeah, John.
For someone who may have some of these elements, what would you recommend as a way to, I guess, to be cognizant of those tendencies within yourself? Sometimes it's hard to notice that you have a tendency to lash out, you have a tendency to...
So for those who might not hear on the computer, so the excellent question was, like, how do we know? How do we ascertain the truth about ourselves? It's a great question. So So I would say hopefully a person does cheshbon nefesh and they're honest with themselves, like really honest with themselves. And hopefully a person also, which I think would be the case in your case, you know, that you have people in your life you can sit down with honestly and say, like, you know me well, whether it's your parents or your siblings or me or whoever, and like, you know, what are the things that you think I have to work on? You know, and really ask for honesty and really engage in that the way that you would, you know, engage in any serious enterprise. And the third piece of that is that eventually in relationship, I don't know when it's going to come, but you're going to be made aware of certain types of things. You know, sometimes the relation themselves will all of a sudden like highlight an issue, and then it's sort of up to you to hear that and see that and respond to it and do the work then. You know, sometimes that's brought to your attention by the person you might be dating. But it's not simple. You know, how do we ever sort of get a true clarity about ourselves? Sometimes it takes like decades, you know, and you know, it's a challenge. Anybody else wants to see if anybody will have a text in a question, or I know it's already late. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you guys. Lila Tov, be well.